Episode number 209, Lighting for the Lens with Andy Rushing. Part one. Let's do it.
This is the definitive podcast for helping you plan, create, and execute dynamic worship experiences at your church. Useful, practical content in the areas of production, worship, communications, first impressions, and more. This is Making Sunday Happen.
Hey guys, welcome to Making Sunday Happen. I'm Carl. If you missed the last couple of weeks of episodes of our show, be sure to catch up. We shared Christine Crescher's talk from Salt 18 all about how to build and sustain a thriving volunteer ministry at your church. You can catch up by going to MakingSundayHappen.com. That's MakingSundayHappen.com. We also give away a lot of free PDFs and resources there in the show notes, pages for each episode. So MakingSundayHappen.com. Be sure to catch up on the last couple weeks of the show if you missed it. And speaking of Salt, this week's episode of the podcast is sponsored by our friends at Salt Conference. If you haven't grabbed a ticket or several tickets for you and your team for this year's conference, be sure to do that at saltnashville.com. That's saltnashville.com. A great lineup of speakers and workshops this year. Joseph Sojourner will be there again. Whitney George, my childhood friend Meredith Andrews will be there, and her husband Jacob will also be doing a workshop and sharing some. A great group of people to learn from. This is a fantastic creative arts conference for you and your media team. Here's a little bit more about what you'll see at this year's conference. Check this out. This week on the show, I welcome Andy Rushing. Andy serves on the team at The Belonging in Nashville. He's an incredible lighting designer. Today, we're going to talk all about lighting for the camera lens. I talked with Andy some a few weeks ago. I'll show you a little bit of that, and then we'll jump to part one of Andy's Lighting for the Lens workshop from Salt 18. That was last year's conference. We'll show his full workshop in two parts, this week and next week. Then don't miss your questions answered in our mailbag segment coming up a little bit later in the show. First up, my video chat with Andy Rushing. Let's roll it. Hey guys, today I welcome Andy Rushing to the podcast. Andy has been the lighting designer for Grammy Award-winning artist Lauren Daigle and Carrie Jobe. He also serves currently on the team at The Belonging Co. in Nashville. Andy, welcome, man. Thanks for hanging out.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Now, we were talking a little bit before we started recording about The Belonging and how you served there. Walk me through that and maybe some other opportunities that you've had lately.
Yeah. So we, I've probably been touring for about maybe almost eight years. And so we, you know, through different clients, different people I've toured with, ended up kind of meeting some of the guys from The Belonging, and 4 years ago they had their first conference. So you know, they reached out to me about getting involved with that as far as lighting goes, and so I did that. We had a lot of fun. They had another event later in the year, and one thing led to another. They reached out about me kind of getting more involved from kind of a staff production staff standpoint. And so that's kind of how that started. which was good. It was a bit of a transition season for me, and so it worked out to kind of have some home based stuff. And so that's how I got plugged in at the Belonging. So now we do kind of all the production lighting design for services, events, a conference is coming up in a couple weeks. So we do that, and then in addition, I still do programming and design for a handful of different artists that can kind of fit in schedule. I still do stuff for Carrie Job. I've done a lot for Natalie Grant here lately, and then kind of a handful of one-offs. And I've been the last couple months I've been working with Jordan Feliz group, which is kind of fun. It's a bit different of a kind of a music scene there, so it's kind of fun to get to do more of the pop stuff as well. But so it's just, if something comes across my table, if I can make it fit schedule wise, I'm more than happy to take it on, and kind of still try and stay involved as much as I can.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. So a lot of people, we have a lot of artists on the podcast and stuff as well. And one thing I try to push is, a concert, especially in the Christian realm, is a worship experience.
Absolutely.
So we can take a lot of, standards or best practices or ideas or whatever from the concert environment and move them to the worship experience. Would you agree with that? And how do you kind of play both fields?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is. I think it's so important to always view I would even say the creative side of it. It's the same creativity. You're using the same tools, whether it's a concert or worship experience. You're going to have a console, you're going to have fixtures. But it's really the heart behind it. Are you programming cues to program cues, colors, positions, or are you doing that kind of stuff, just to do what's cool at the moment, or what you might have seen over the weekend at a bigger tour or something like that? Is it coming from that, or are you actually pressing in and going, okay, how can I actually make this another extension of worship? How can I create a three-dimensional space that goes beyond just the sounds or the lyrics that are being sung? Because that's really what it is. It's all tools to create that space and go, okay, God is so much bigger than just music and lyrics. You look outside, you see the colors and everything that He's created. How do we make that a part of the worship experience? I think it's integral. And that's how I try and approach everything. We with Carrie's stuff, obviously she's a massive worship leader, and so all of her stuff is very, very worship heavy. And while it is, people are still buying a ticket, it's still a concert that they're going to, it is very much a worship experience. Yeah. And so it's important for me to view it that way and go, okay, let's, instead of me saying, all right, well, I have a budget to get some fixtures into program, and yes, people are going to buy a ticket, but how do we go from people are buying a ticket to come see a show to people are buying a ticket for a worship experience where they're going to leave changed? And I think that's, that's important for me. And I would even challenge other lighting designers and even artists as well in the worship realm to go, okay, how do we step beyond that person on a stage? How do we challenge creativity to allow people to leave changed?
Right.
Ultimately by the presence of God.
Yeah. Yeah. I do think there's a lot of parallels between the two. And from a production standpoint and planning, creating standpoint, I think we can learn a lot from the guys on each side. So you do a lot of concerts. Yeah. And, same stuff kind of applies in the worship venue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so today on the podcast, we're going to pitch to a talk that you did at SALT 18 last year, all about lighting for the lens. So this is really going to hit production guys in lighting, also in camera work and making sure that lighting is good for the camera, making sure that the cameras look good on screen. Okay, so walk me through this workshop and some things that people will learn, and just maybe what you were hoping that people would take away from it.
Yeah, when they approached me about SALT last year, I was very excited and loved the topic. So, you know, it was important for me to try and hit some areas that could be practical, and even things that, as I've come through it, have been like, man, you know, that would have been great to have some knowledge on that prior to having to figure it out on the go. So I think the most important thing is that, you know, it's not two teams. It's not lighting and camera. It's not lighting and video. We're there to do one thing. It's one goal, and we're really one team. So it's not, there's never a moment where it's worth me making something else suffer because I have to have this color at this moment, or right, I have to have these lights shooting in this direction. It's all about give and take and compromise, and realizing that it's a, you know, there's one goal that we're trying to achieve, and we need to do it the best we possibly can. So, yeah. Working together is key. It's you know, everybody's wrong at some point, and everybody's right at some point, and we have to be able to understand that. So, it might be that, you know, hey, we need to maybe not point the light straight out at the cameras the whole time, or let's maybe look at some colors that aren't so saturated so the camera picks them up better. So that was important to address kind of how do we set the frame for the camera. Camera quality is always very important, and how it's shot is very important. But at the end of the day, when you look through that lens, it's our job to put something there. So we have to understand how things work and how the lens is going to read light and color temperature. So that was important. Color temperature was also a very important thing. How do we make sure that the people that we're capturing on camera look natural, as well as everything that we're capturing? You know, a big pet peeve of mine is when you dial everything in for the person and not a single color behind them looks like what it's supposed to. So it's finding that middle ground of okay, this is, you know, this is going to work in every scenario. So that was important. One takeaway that ended up being kind of funny was my comments on haze and haze being very important. But it truly is. If you're, you know, if you're trying to set a nice tone on camera, the camera needs something to capture. And unless it's all scenic and you're just shooting light onto surfaces, you know, you have to create that surface, which is what haze does. And it gives your camera something to shoot, and it allows you to control intensity so that, you know, you don't have to blow your cameras out in order to pick light up. You can dial everything back, which led me to, you know, another point in my talk where I said at full is never the appropriate intensity, and haze allows you to play with that. We personally run our front light at about 68%. There's some variations in there based on hotspots, but it's right around the 70 and just under the 70% mark, because everything has to layer in order for it to be the perfect canvas. And haze gives you that third dimension of saying, okay, you know, let's have light fall behind this person, but we want to see it. Right. So that was a big takeaway as well.
Awesome. Well, some things I really want folks to watch for during your talk is light intensity and how haze kind of changes mm-hmm. the way a camera sees things. Also white balance and dealing with different colors on camera. You mentioned that a little bit.
Yes.
Identifying camera placement and negative space and how that all works in. And then how to be intentional with any size budget.
Yes.
Those are kind of some main points I want people to hit. So before we throw to it, anything else that we need to be looking for?
No, I think you hit the nail on the head. Awesome. Those are all, you know, extremely important ways to work together with camera and lighting to ultimately create the best experience, both in the live setting and, you know, if you have people streaming, you know, it's very important for them to feel a part of it. And, the best way to do that is to have really nice lighting and camera.
Yeah. Awesome, man. Well, okay, let's throw to the workshop. This is part one of Andy Rushing at Salt 18 talking about lighting for the lens. Check this out.
All right, how's everybody doing? Good? Good conference so far?
Great.
Awesome. I'm usually on the other side of the microphone, as I'm sure many of you guys are familiar with, so bear with me if it seems like I don't usually talk into the microphone. So lighting for the lens, making cameras look great on screen. When Saul approached me about doing this, I was super excited. This has kind of been, and especially within the kind of the recent year or so, this has become more of a priority for me as a lighting designer, having to worry about camera. When I got started, camera was not a priority for me, mainly because a lot of what I did, we didn't have, we weren't broadcasting it. It wasn't being fit. Like as long as it looked good on my phone, taking pictures for Instagram, it was fine. And, so it was not a priority, and it's definitely something that has become one in a lot of different ways. And really, you have to look at it, you know, too. It's with the way technology is going, pretty much everything is seen through a lens of some sort, whether it's somebody recording it on their phone, posting it to Instagram, social media, or in the more traditional sense of IMAG or even for broadcast or capture. That's been a big priority of mine is how do I fix the habits that I created when I started doing lighting? How do I correct what's wrong so that it looks as good as it does live through a lens? I was super happy to get to talk about this today, and there'll definitely be time for questions at the end. Hopefully more time than less. And honestly, if you have questions, if a point comes up or I say something, you have questions, you really don't even have to wait till the end. I'll be more than happy to answer questions as we go through it. Just so you don't forget, I don't forget. Let's get started. So light intensity. One of my worst habits when I first started programming, and I guess kind of as we get into this, to get a feel for kind of who all is here today, how many of you guys actually program on a desk week to week or for shows? Show of hands. How many oh, great. Good group of guys. How many direct? How many kind of oversee? Okay, perfect. I guess for the rest of you who might not have raised your hands, kind of you can shout it out. But what are your roles in the lighting and lens aspect? Are you guys kind of on the other side of it from camera world?
Yeah.
Awesome. Which is great. I've also learned that's been a big one for me is how do I have good relationships with my video guys, which, you know, and that's one thing that is difficult that I hate in the production world is that the unnecessary rivalry of different departments when in all reality, it's one goal that you're trying to make happen. There's no reason why lighting guys should get mad at video guys or vice versa, or, you know, audio guys should get thrown under the bus. You know, it's everybody's there to make the same thing happen. And so if we all get along and can understand how we can do our job better to help the next team, then you get a better end goal. So now that I know who all is here, which is great, let's get going. Yeah, so light intensity. For the programmers out there, my worst habit when I started was at full. Everything I did was at full, whether it was, you know, programming washes, you know, upstage wash looks, whatever it was. Everything, I grabbed a light, I turned it on all the way. And honestly, you can get away with that when it's just the eye looking at the rig, but cameras do not see light, rooms, surfaces. They do not see it the way that we can. So that brings me to my first point, the lens versus the eye. How can we, as lighting guys or girls, producers, like, how can we create something that is great for the lens and the eye, and what are the kind of the differences? So the first question you have to ask yourself is, what is the main focus for your lighting? Is it the room or the camera? That obviously depends on what you do as a church, as an organization. You know, what is your main focus? Do you have a massive online community? Broadcast, is that not really a part of it? Is it mainly just people there? Is IMAG a big portion of your service? What does that look like? And you have to pick that. Great news is you can light for both, but one does need to be a priority. So once you know that, that'll help you kind of develop how you set your scenes, your looks, how you work with the video department and angles, that kind of thing, to know what your priority is. I went full-time at the Belonging Company, which is doing worship here, which is great. I think they're doing that tonight as well. So I went full-time with them in April. I was part-time the year prior. Coming from touring, still doing that as well. And when we started, the online community was not huge. It was there, but it wasn't a priority. We just captured everything because you never knew when we would ever want to reuse footage for anything. So we just captured it, but that was never the main focus. Once we did the lighting install and things began to grow, we realized that a lot of our community was actually coming from online. Yes, you know, we would have large crowds at services, but a lot of people were online, and we kind of had to rethink how we did stuff. It wasn't about the room is important, but going back to the lens versus the eye, you see things completely different through your eye than you do through a camera lens. So you can get away with a lot of stuff live that you can't get away with when it's looking through a camera. So we kind of had to rethink and say, okay, our priority now is the online community. How do we make that 100% and then fill in the rest for the room? One of the first areas was intensity and figuring out the balance between key light, which is your front light, and everything else that happens around what you're lighting. So you should never run key light at full. That is a big no-no. You will pretty much ruin everything else. If you run key light at full, there's no way to get anything else brighter than your key light. So you're going to completely wash out anything that's happening on stage from a look standpoint. The camera has got to focus on something, which, so you see a little bit lower with regards to iris, the camera has to have some reference to brightness when you set your lighting looks. So if you run your key light at full, your camera's going to iris to that, which means everything else behind is going to be super dark and you're not going to be able to see anything, any definition. All those hours that you spent programming for Sunday are going to be wasted because you can't see anything because the camera had to iris for a super, super hot front light. So a good ratio that I like to use is 2:1. So whatever I'm running my looks at, I like to start at about 50% less on key light. Now, I'll play with that a little bit. It also depends on what your key light instruments are. But that's a great place to start. And then you go from there. Doing that with our new set at the church, I ended up finding that 65% was the perfect level for front light for us with the instruments we used. So we set up the cameras. I built my speaking look. I put front light at 50%. Looked at the cameras and realized I needed to bump it up a little bit. So the 2:1 is not always perfect, but it is a great starting point to figure out, okay, what does this work? How do we need to adjust? I've done events where we've had moving front light and it actually needed to be lower. I ended up running them at like 42, maybe 43%. So it was actually less than 50, and that's just because the source was a brighter source, so you had to dim it back a little bit. But your camera can only set its iris for one level to be the main focus. And so as lighting guys, it's important to work with your video team to figure out what that level needs to be. You know your instruments better than anyone else, so you know what your set is going to do. You know what the lights in your set can do. So you are the one to set that level for the cameras to iris to. So it's important to get that done right out of the gate. This one's going to be fun because I know everybody's got opinions on haze. It is probably the most important thing to me. I've gotten in plenty of arguments with people about haze, but when I spec rigs for shows, tours, church, whatever it is, haze is one of my top priorities. If I do not have good haze, if the atmosphere is terrible, one, I'm going to be in a bad mood the whole time. But secondly, everything that I try to do intentionally for whatever the service is, whether it's a worship service, speaking, whatever it is, I'm not going to be able to translate that well because I don't have, if you look at it from a painting standpoint, I don't have a canvas to show what I'm doing unless I have good haze. So haze really is everything. You've got to give your camera something to shoot. So if you've got a light at a 45 above your subject shooting down across, if you don't have haze, then you see a super hot light source on camera, and then you see an unrelated shadow in front of your subject. If you have haze, it makes sense now because you see the beams coming through them. It gives something behind the subject for the cameras to kind of balance between. Without that, none of it's going to make any sense. Also, don't waste your lights. Whatever you have, somebody has invested in those. You're not going to get your money's worth out of them if you can't show what they do. Now, obviously, if you're uplighting a wall, you're replacing haze with a surface to shoot the light onto, which is totally fine. But if you are going for that look of a lighting rig with beams and textures and stuff, you're not going to get it unless you have something to project that onto. I know haze is a bigger conversation with a lot of people. You have venue restrictions and you've got people that are probably higher up on the chain than you that don't want it. And that's understood. obviously be respectful. You know, you never want to make anybody mad about it. But try to present the good in it. And that's the difficulty with lighting, especially in churches in general. It's there's always these bad connotations, you know, with the rock show and the smoke and all that kind of stuff. But it really does make a difference. And if you can go about it the right way and present it the right way, you can get people on your side and help them realize that, you know what, it is actually, it's another element of worship. It's another element of creativity. It's another way to, it's another way for people to kind of experience that worship atmosphere than just the music. Not that it's needed, but when done right, it adds so much. So haze is everything. So I've got a couple pictures throughout just to maybe try and show some examples or things that are good, things that are bad. So with regard to kind of haze and that key light, everything that we just talked about, this is a screen grab from the switch of one of our normal services at the Belonging. And this is kind of our typical speaking look. Now we have a, so it's me and one of our creative directors that kind of work to come up with kind of the look that we want for stuff. He is very much a creative director and I'm very much the tech side of things. So it's a great combo, but he doesn't always understand gear. And sometimes I don't always understand the big creative aspect of things. And so we work well together. That being said, our concept was, let's do a nice clean white look and let the graphics on the LED wall bring color to the speaking look. That way we can kind of have a nice clean slate and whatever we need to do, whether it's offering slides, message slides, kids stuff, whatever it is, we never have to worry about things clashing when we put new slides up. Everything goes with white. And it's an easy thing for the camera to pick up. So as you'll see here, we've got, so we're using, it's the Ovation LED Leco as front light. We've got 8 of them. And like I said, we're running them at about 65%. And so you can see how everything behind Pastor Alex, who on this service was the subject we were lighting, everything behind her is at a greater intensity, especially you can't really, it's not a super wide shot, but the washes that are up above, the spots, everything coming down is actually quite a bit brighter than the key light. But with the way that the camera irises and the way that I was able to work with our video team to come up with that, we were actually able to make her stand out in front of the lighting rig and the LED wall with correct levels. So that's why that is super important. The next picture will be from our conference that we just had. Obviously, it was quite a bit bigger than our normal services, but same concepts. So we had, I think there was actually 15 cameras, and you can see the guy, he's kind of right down on the edge of the stage. But this presented some challenges. How do you make something still feel intimate on a bigger scale? How do you keep the same levels and contrast between it? And on this particular rig, we were using the Roby BMFL blades for front light, which I was super excited about. I'm a huge fan of pretty much everything that they put out. But those are great front light fixtures. But the output is astronomical compared to the LED Lecos we have at church. So I ended up having to run these at, I think, 38%, which seems crazy, but with the way the rest of the rig laid behind it and we were able to play with levels, we were able to make the speaker pop on camera with a 38% front wash. Not everything's going to be like that, but it's taking the extra 10 minutes and working with your video guys to figure out, what works here? What are we going for? How can we make this work? And we actually had a challenge on this. Our video director for the conference wanted the speaker to actually be a little bit darker, wanted the rig to pop more, which I'm always for that, but we actually had a hard time seeing him in the room, which I've never had an issue with something in the room being too dark. And so I actually had to work with him and say, okay, well, can we actually iris back a little bit, because we're losing the connection with the speaker in the room because it's not bright enough. And so we ended up having to bump it up. But again, it's having that relationship with your video guys, or vice versa, as video guys, you know, if it's the other way around, if you need something, it's having that relationship to be able to say, you know, let's find a middle ground. I'm all for that. I'm all for it looking great for camera, or I'm all for it looking great for the room, but we're actually missing it a little bit. Can we make some adjustments? And that always will create the best product, the best service, the best experience that you can put forward. This next one here is another shot from conference, and you can see this is a little bit better of a camera shot for front light, but you can see for worship, we actually zoomed the movers in a little bit to create more of a spot feel. And by doing that, the intensity increased a little bit. And so we had to adjust again intensity levels for cameras. But you can see kind of how they pop from everything behind them. And it's all creating depth. Levels create depth. And so if you can get your base set on your camera for your subject, you can create all the depth in the world behind them, whether you've got this or whatever your stage looks like.
The show notes for this episode are available now at makingsundayhappen.com.
We will continue Andy's workshop next week on the podcast, so you'll want to see the second half of his workshop on lighting for the lens next week. I'll also do another video chat with him, so you'll see a little bit more and hear more from him next week. But now it's time for your questions answered. It's time for the mailbag. Let's roll it. All right, remember to send in your questions to us if you have anything about planning, creating, or executing the worship experience at your church. Now, I certainly haven't arrived, but we can do our very best to get your questions answered. If I don't know the answer, I'll try to find somebody who does. So if you serve on the First Impressions team, worship team, media, or production teams at your church, if you're a pastor or church planner, if you're on your church communications team, any team that touches the worship experience, we would love to help you. You can email your question directly to me at carl@1230.media. That's all spelled out. The word 12, the word 30, dot media, carl@1230.media. Or jump into our Making Sunday Happen Facebook group and use the hashtag MSH Mailbag, Making Sunday Happen Mailbag. We will see your question and possibly read it and answer it here on the podcast. This week, we have a couple of questions about sermon bumpers and series trailers. Question number one comes from Samantha Wilson on Facebook. She asked, if your budget was limited and you could only invest in one software for content creation, what would you get and why? Well, I have two answers here. I would only suggest that you produce your own design and video content if and only if you have skilled people on your team to do it. Now, if not, you can reach out to companies like ours who can make that content for you at a very affordable price. But if your team is at a place where you can bring on skilled designers and video producers to produce your own content, there's one major suite of software that I'm going to suggest, and it's pretty standard, and that is the Adobe Creative Suite. So it's about $50 a month to have that. It has everything that you need to create design and video. So from Photoshop to Illustrator, After Effects, Premiere for video content, and more. So if your team is at a place, is at a skill level where they can produce their own content, and again, I would really kind of compare their work with other churches to see if they're on a skill level that can handle that. But if your team can, then Adobe Creative Suite is what I would spend my money on. And $50 a month is a pretty great deal. So the Adobe Creative Suite, you can go to adobe.com/creativecloud, adobe.com/creativecloud, and sign up for that. We're not, they're not an affiliate of ours or anything like that. We get no money off of this. This is just my suggestion for you. It's got all the programs that you would need for design and video. Adobe Creative Suite. All right, question number two comes from Gary Griffin on Facebook. He asks, for those that regularly produce them, talking about bumpers and trailers, how much lead time are you given before it needs to air on a Sunday? What does the planning phase look like? Great question, Gary. Here's my answer. One thing that can hinder a creative team is that even though a series might be planned out months in advance, they don't have the details of that series until several weeks or even days out from doing it. So you as the leadership can plan months out, and you can say, well, we were planned months out, but the creative team needs the nitty-gritty details. They need the sermon titles for every week. They need what you're preaching on this Sunday. And I know that you might have an overall view of we're teaching on relationships. Okay, but what about? What do we need to be communicating? So if you could give your creative team those details 2 or 3 weeks out, that would be great. Your graphics and print team will need 4 to 6 weeks out at least to design print materials and get them printed. It's just how it works. It's just how long it takes for a print shop to print stuff and turn it around. So you want to treat all of your creative team in that mindset. Sometimes we understand what that means. I know I got to get it off to the printer because they need an X amount of time to get it out, but we don't think that same way when it comes to our own internal creative team. So your print team is going to need 4 to 6 weeks out. Your video team needs about 2 to 3 weeks out at a minimum. Now, this gives them time to shoot anything, to script anything, things like that. So 2 to 3 weeks out for your video team, 4 to 6 weeks out for your print team. Also, your print team, your graphics team being 4 to 6 weeks out, once those graphics are done and approved, then they send them to video. So sometimes video can't even work until the graphic is approved. So 4 to 6 weeks out for graphics, 2 to 3 weeks out for video. Now, can things be turned around faster? Yes, they can. But to give creatives the time to make things look really good, the timelines that I just laid out, 4 to 6 weeks and then 2 to 3 weeks for your video team, at a minimum is a good starting point. So now, that being said, I'm going to almost contradict myself here. Creatives, you cannot harp about deadlines and then you need 2 to 3 months. That's unrealistic. You need to give yourself a realistic timeline, and 2 to 3 weeks for a video person is more than enough time. It can be turned around in a couple of days, but 2 to 3 weeks to shoot, to edit, to get things together for multiple projects is reasonable. So that being said, creatives do need deadlines. The boundaries can help with creativity as well. So there is definitely a balance there. But at a minimum, and what you should probably shoot for is 4 to 6 weeks out on graphics, 2 to 3 weeks out on video. Hope that helps you there. All right, question number three comes from Wes Harris on Facebook. His question is, what is the why behind a sermon bumper? Is it out of function only? Is it getting in and out of the live environment to go to recorded something? Is this a transition on stage? What are some reasons why behind doing a sermon bumper? Okay, Wes, so here are several things that I can answer this by. So a bumper can serve multiple purposes. It's used to set the tone for the message your pastor is about to preach. It gives branding to your series. It packages it together so that the series itself is more memorable. Hey, remember when we did that series, and I remember that video, and I remember what he taught on. It's memorable. So it sets the tone for what your pastor is about to preach on. Bumpers are also used as a transitional element in the service to get the podium off, to get speakers on stage, to get the choir off or band off. And it can also divert the attention of your audience to the screen while things are happening on stage. So again, getting your band off, getting the pastor on, the podium moved into place. It just diverts people's attention for 30 seconds, 60 seconds, so that transition can happen. Bumpers can also be used to promote your series. You can tweak them to use as a trailer. We do this all the time. We make bumpers, and then we tag the end with a new series coming next week, or new series coming in 2 weeks. That gives churches the ability to use it on social media or play it weeks before their series starts to help promote the series. So you can use that on social media, your website, or other places to tease people about what's coming. And it teases new people to have interest in coming to your church. So bumpers are used to promote your series. Bumpers are also a great way, a great thing to use for online messages. If you have an online church of some kind, an online campus, people are used to consuming video. Video is now the now, and it is the future. It's where everything is. It's where everything is going. Video online and on your website and on social media gets 10 times more plays than an audio or only or a graphic. So use a video. It's an incredible tool to pique interest and also brand your series. So Wes, I hope that gives you a couple of things to think about when it comes to the why behind a bumper. I would say it's definitely worth the money, whether you're paying an in-house team to produce your content or if you're coming to a 1230 Media or another company. It is totally worth your money to have a design, a well-crafted design and a well-crafted video. All right, again, to send in your questions, email me at carl@1230.media or hashtag MSHmailbag on social media, and we'll see that and we'll try to get your question answered on the podcast. Next week, we will continue our chat and the workshop from Andy Rushing all about lighting for the lens. We're going to air the second half of his workshop, and then on the back half of that, I have another video chat with Andy that we'll share as well. So that's all next week. We'll kind of wrap up this two-part series with Andy next week. In 2 weeks on the show, I'll welcome the lead singer of the band Big Daddy Weave. Mike Weaver will be in the house. Big Daddy Weave has delivered dozens of great songs over the years. I'll talk with Mike about an incredible rough year that the band has gone through and what it's like to continue to do ministry while the storm is hitting you square in the face. Maybe you can relate to that. It's Mike Weaver from the band Big Daddy Weave in 2 weeks on the show. Show notes page for this episode of the podcast is at makingsundayhappen.com, and you can join the Facebook community at facebook.com/makingsundayhappen. Well, thank you guys for listening and watching this week. Go out there and create some incredible experiences this weekend. I'll catch you next week.
Making Sunday Happen is a production of the Ministry of 1230 Media. For show notes, archive episodes, and more free resources for your church, visit makingsundayhappen.com.